as we move now from that part of our service now and teach you the Word of God. And we're going to start our teaching today in Psalm number 1. We will be in the book of Judges, but we're just going to start at Psalm number 1. So if you want to open your Bibles to Psalm 1, and we're just going to read one verse. And I'm going to link this verse to 1 Corinthians 15:33. Psalm 1 links to 1 Corinthians 15:33. But let's just read Psalm 1 and verse 1. And it says, blessed. It means blessed. The word blessed means multiple plural blessings that are ongoing. Blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good character. Bad company corrupts good character. We'll come back to that. We'll land at the end of our sermon on Samson today. We will land back here at Psalm 1 and 1 Corinthians 15:33. But I just want to point out to you one principle that we see here. We see, first of all, the man who is blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly. If you flip that on its head, the man who misses out on the blessing is the person who walks in the counsel of the ungodly, who seeks ungodly counsel as opposed to seeking godly counsel. And then he's the man who stops walking and starts standing. And he's standing in the way of sinners. He's keeping bad company. And then lastly, he sits in the seat of the scornful. Scornful is a bitterness and a hatred and an anger. And that's where it ends up. If you stop and think about Lot, that was Lot. It said he set his tent with a door open towards Sodom. He didn't go straight there. He set his tent with a door open towards Sodom. And eventually he went to live in Sodom. And then eventually he sat in the gate as one of the leaders of that wicked city. And he was God's appointed man, the nephew of Abraham. You see, there's a process here, folks. Walking, standing still, sitting down. And we're going to see that in the character of Samson today. So let's go back to Judges in chapter 14, and we'll pick up the narrative in chapter 14. And so first of all, in verses 1 to 4, in chapter 14, verses 1 to 4, we see Samson's marriage. Samson's marriage. And it says, and Samson, and watch carefully, Samson went down. Five times in this chapter, you're going to see that phrase. Samson went down. Just like the guy in Psalm 1:1, the opposite to the man, the antithesis of the man in Psalm 1:1, he starts by walking, then he stops walking and starts standing. And then he stops standing and he sits in the seat of the scornful. And we see Samson starting into that process. He says, and Samson went down to Timnath, and he saw a woman. Now, I want you to get an understanding of this. As I studied this word and pulled this word apart, saw, it seems like a fairly simple word. He saw a woman. You get the idea that he was walking along down the main street of Timnath, and he just saw this lady. That's not what happened at all. He beheld this woman. She came into his view, and he beheld this woman, and he probably followed her around. And the lust of the eyes took over. He desired this woman. That's what this means. It's not just a matter of, I saw this lady walk past. It's nothing like that. This is a much deeper and a much more sinister thing. He went down there and he saw a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. What's he doing down there? This is a bloke with a Nazarite vow. What is the bloke doing in Timnath? And we'll find out more as we move along. You'll see as you go through Samson's life here. Samson, chapter 14 reveals that Samson has a problem. It reveals Samson's problem of disobedience to God, but it also reveals God's providence for Israel. And Samson's so-called achievements, they're more like antics. They're more like the antics of a clown. He does crazy things. And yet, you know, God uses those crazy things. He was appointed as a judge, but he never judged anybody. He never led Israel to any military victory. And in point of fact, the situation of Israel at the end of Samson's life was worse than what it was at the start. He was pretty much in his life a pretty miserable failure because he made his life to be all about him and nothing about God. You don't see anything here about him worshipping God. You don't see anything here about him waiting on God. He just barrels off and does the craziest antics and gets himself into all sorts of strife. But of course, he's got this great strength in his own ability. He's able to extricate himself from most of the stuff. So he goes down to Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines, and verse 2 says, and now we see Samson's request. He says, and he came up and he told his father and his mother and said, I've seen a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore get her for me to wife. What? This bloke is a Nazarite. This bloke is a Nazarite from his womb. He didn't choose it. God chose it for him, and he doesn't have any respect for it at all. And you know what that Nazarite vow involves. But come back with me, if you would, to Deuteronomy 7 and verse 3, and we'll see what the scriptures have to say about what he is requesting. Deuteronomy 7 and verse 2 says this, and when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, neither show mercy unto them, neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Your daughter shall not give unto his son, nor his daughter shall you take unto your son. No mixed marriages. It says you marry amongst yourselves, but you don't marry these wicked people of the land. And there wasn't anybody much more wicked than the Philistines. And yet here he is. He heads off to Timnath. He's wandering around amongst all the Philistines, and the lust of the eyes takes over. He sees a beautiful woman and he just wants her. And he goes back to his parents and he says to his parents, wants to get that woman for me. Now, that's the way that thing worked in those days. They all arranged marriages. The father of the guy met with the father of the woman, and they made an arrangement, and there was a payment made, and then a marriage took place. And he says to his mother and his father, get her for me. And now we see the reaction of his parents. would have been my reaction too. Then his father and his mother said unto him, is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren or among my people that you go to take a wife of these uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said unto his father, oh yeah, I didn't think of that. And that's not what he said. Listen to what he said. And Samson said unto his father, get her for me, for she pleases me well. It's not the woman's character that pleases him. It's her body. He's just lustfully attracted to this woman, and by now the lust of the eyes has morphed into the lust of the flesh, and he just wants this woman. Get her for me. Now, it's interesting, in this verse, it talks about taking a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines. If you want to make a note to yourself, Exodus chapter 34, verses 11 to 16, will give a very clear teaching in relation to what he's being, what he's saying here. His attraction to this woman was purely sexual, and he is determined for his mother and his father to get him, regardless of the principle. Okay, so already he's in of the 613 laws, he's already breaking them one after the other. And he couldn't care less, because he's not really thinking with his head. In verse 4, we see this, and there's a very interesting principle here I want to teach you today. But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines, for at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. The Philistines were oppressing the Israelites. So when you read this verse, when you first read this verse, you go, oh, well, it looks like this was actually the will of God. So you mean to tell me that God has been very explicit in Exodus and in Deuteronomy, he's been very explicit in laying down the law, the Mosaic law. He's been very explicit, intermarriage is a no-no. And now all of a sudden he says, yeah, this is okay, this is what I want you to do. You see, it's not what he wants you to do. The principle here is that God's providential will or his providential purpose will be achieved even in spite of our disobedience. I often think that what God achieves, he achieves not because of us, but in spite of us. And I want you to come back with me to Genesis chapter 50, the last chapter in the book of Genesis. And you know the background to this is that Joseph had a dream, and he shared his dream with his brothers, and his older brother, the eldest brother, Judah, he took great exception to this, and they sold him into slavery. And, of course, his being sold into slavery was actually the thing that saved Jacob and his sons and his grandsons, etc. And of course, when Joseph dies, if you look at verse 18, when Joseph dies, now his brothers are, you know, he's going to kill us now. Now that Dad's gone, he's going to kill us. And they go to him, like the cringers they are. In verse 18, he says, and his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we be thy servants. And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for am I in the place of God? He's a godly man. He's a man with respect for Yahweh. And he says, fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you thought evil against me when you sold me into slavery, but God meant it for good, to bring to pass as it is this day, and to save much people alive. You see, God will use even our disobedience to achieve his purposes. And that's the principle that we see in verse 4. God's providential will. He is going to, he said, if you just look back into verse 13, into chapter 13, I beg your pardon, it says in verse 5, for lo, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. It doesn't say he'll deliver them out of the hand of the Philistines. It says he'll begin that process. God's going to begin the process of getting rid of the Philistines, which is what he instructed them to do before they even entered the land. And God's going to step in and take care of this. And now we see, so we've seen Samson's marriage. And now in starting with verse 5 through to 9, we now see Samson's complete disregard for the grace of God. His disregard for the grace of God. We have just spent time prayerfully, reflectively honouring the grace of God in taking communion together. This bloke is disregarding the grace of God, and you'll see what we mean in these verses. So in verse 5 it says, then Samson went down. Here he goes again. But then went Samson down, and his father and his mother, they must have been very grieved in their heart. He went down, his father and his mother, to Timnath, and came to the vineyards of Timnath. And behold, a young lion roared against him. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him. God's protecting him, see. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he rent the lion as he would have rent a kid. And he had nothing in his hand, but he told not his father or his mother what he had done. In what he perceived to be his own strength, he grabs the lion and rips the thing apart. And his life was spared. And in verse 7, and he went down and he talked with the woman. This is the woman he's been lusting after. He went down and he talked with the woman, and she pleased Samson well. I want you to turn over in your Bibles to Judges 21:25. It's right at the end. Judges 21:25. And you'll get a bit of a picture here of what this verse is saying. Judges 21:25 says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. This is what I want. This is what I want to do. I don't care what anybody else thinks. I don't even care what God thinks. And twice in the book of Judges, the first one is in Judges 17 and verse 6, and the other one is in Judges 21 and verse 25. We find this statement that every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And here we see this, that literally it says, she pleased Samson well. You could translate that. The concept that comes across is she looked good to him. She looked sexually desirable to him. And as far as he was concerned, in his own eyes, having her was the right thing to do. Had nothing to do with God. He doesn't pray. He doesn't worship. He doesn't seek the mind of God. He just sees this woman and he wants this woman. And hang the consequences. And in verse 8 it says, and after a time he returned to take her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, there is a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion. From my studies of this passage, I understand that it isn't usual for bees to create a a hive, like in something like a dead body, they're more apt to do that in a tree or bushes or whatever. But at any rate, this swarm of bees have created a hive in the carcass of the dead lion. And of course, there's honey there. And what does he do? He doesn't hesitate. What is one of the three elements of the Nazarite vow? You can't touch anything that's dead. You can't touch a dead body. So what does he do? He took of the honey from out of the dead body. He broke his Nazarite vow and thought nothing of it. And he took thereof in his hands, and he went on eating, and he came to his father and his mother. He's now defiled himself. He's now ceremonially unclean in Israel, and he now brings this to his parents. He doesn't tell them that it came from a dead body. And it says, and he gave them and they did eat, but he told not them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. Do you know why? Because they wouldn't have eaten it. Because they would know if they would eat that and it's taken out of a dead body, that they would be ceremonially unclean and they wouldn't have eaten it. So he doesn't tell them. He callously puts them in a position where they become ceremonially unclean because of his actions. And he's the guy with the Nazarite vow. It's extraordinary. In verse 10, we see Samson's further willful behaviour. Here's where he just bursts into crazy antics. It says, so his father went down unto the woman, and Samson made there a feast, for so used the young men to do. Now, there's actually a lot in that verse that isn't stated, but that lies in behind that verse. It says, so his father went down unto the woman. It means he went down to the home of the woman and made an arrangement with her father for her to be married to his son. In explicit breaking of the law stated in Deuteronomy 7:3 and Exodus 34:11-16, and they made this arrangement, and then they went into this time of feasting. So Samson made there a feast, and where was he making the feast? In Timnath. In a Philistine village, right amongst the enemies of Israel, and he makes this. And we see here how comfortable he has become in the presence of the enemies of God. And it says, and it came to pass in verse 11, when they saw him, that they brought 30 companions with him. He's very comfortable being amongst these Philistines, lairizing, boozing and carrying on. In verse 10 there, where it says, and Samson made there a feast, you get a really good understanding of what this feast is when you read the book of Esther. And there was, and in chapter 1 of Esther, there's a feast going on, and King Ahasuerus is having a feast, and it's basically a feast, or if you like, a drinking banquet. They just drink themselves senseless for 7 days, and that's what's going on here. And now he's just broken the second vow, and the second vow, Nazarite vow, was to touch no wine or strong drink. In other words, alcoholic. Booze made from grain, such as barley and wheat. He wasn't to touch that, but here he is. Not only is he at the feast, he actually put it on. And all of these Philistines come in and they're boozing themselves into smithereens, and with 30 of these guys. And in verse 12 it says, and in the midst of all this, Samson says to them, I will now put forth a riddle unto you. If you can certainly declare it to me within the 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I will give you 30 sheets and 30 changes of garments. Now, unless that's explained to you, you won't have the faintest idea what that means. So let me just pick that apart. First of all, this riddle business, this foolishness that they're going on with, is something that was common, a common form of entertainment, and it derives from the Hebrew word hadot. And we see the same thing happen in 1 Kings chapter 10 and verse 1. And in 1 Kings 10, we see Solomon flirting and skiting with the Queen of Sheba about all of his stuff. And he issues her with a riddle. He gives her a riddle. He's acting like a fool. And Samson here is acting like a fool. And he throws out this riddle. And this riddle, of course, is about the lion and the honey. And so he says, if you can get it, if you can work out the riddle, well, then I will give you, because there's 30 of you, I will give you each a change of sheets and 30 changes of garments. Now, they're not bed sheets he's talking about here. The word for sheets means underwear, okay? So it's a high-quality underwear that he's talking about, and the garments are ceremonial outer garments, very expensive. So they're expensive ceremonial clothing that he's actually referring to here. A lot of money, very expensive, a lot of money. But if you cannot declare it to me, in verse 13, if you can't declare it to me, then you will give me 30 sheets and 30 changes of garments. And they said unto him, put forth your riddle that we may hear it. It's on. And he says, righto, here it is. And he said unto them, out of the eater, obviously that's the lion, came forth meat, and that's obviously honey. And out of the strong, the lion, came forth sweetness, which is the honey. And they could not in 3 days expound the riddle. He riddled them. He fiddled them and riddled them. And we're now at the last day of the feast. We're at the seventh day of the massive booze up. We now see the effects of his foolishness. We see Samson's losses here in these last five verses or so. It says in verse 15, it says, and it came to pass on the seventh day, very significant, came to pass on the seventh day that they said unto Samson's wife. Now, let me just stop there a minute. They were not actually married at this point in time. They were betrothed at this point in time, and we don't use that word. That would be the same as being engaged. When I asked Robin to marry me, we got engaged. We put a ring on her finger, and that ring said to the world that we have made a promise to one another to marry. At some point in the future, we're going to marry, because obviously we did. In this culture, when I put that ring on Robin's finger and we became engaged, she would then be called my wife. And that's why the word wife is being used here. So, and he said unto them, in verse 15, and it came to pass on the seventh day that they said unto Samson's wife, entice your husband that he may declare unto us the riddle, lest we burn you and your father's house with fire. For have you called us to take what we have? They are accusing her. Understand the language, the lingo here. It's a bit clumsy in the English, but what they're saying is, you've put him up to this. And you've put him up to this to steal from us, to take from us these really expensive clothing that it's going to make him wealthy. And we're not really prepared to do this. And so they say, have you called us to take what we have? Is it not so? And they make a very serious accusation, and they promise to burn down the house and to kill her and her father and the family. So it's a pretty serious situation. This is a great a great wedding feast they're having. And understand that day seven in their world, at the end of the feast, the husband, the young couple who are betrothed, they go off to their little private place and they consummate their physical relationship, and they too become one flesh, and now they're married. That is called the act of marriage. Sexual intercourse at this point here in time, in this culture, was what culminated or consummated the relationship that had been formed by money changing hands. And then when they have intercourse together, that now seals that marriage covenant. That's why divorce is a terrible picture of the tearing apart or the separation of the two people. It's like a picture of the separation of the believer from the Holy Spirit, and it's a horrible thing. And so here we see this guy. Now, this, they haven't yet consummated their marriage because it's still the seventh day. And we see this come out very clearly here in verse 16. And Samson's wife wept before him. And she said, You dost but hate me, and you don't love me. You've put forth a riddle unto the children of my people, and you've not told it to me. And he said unto her, and watch the words carefully. Behold, I have not told it to my father nor my mother, and shall I tell you? Now, the significance is this. All the way back in Genesis chapter 2, God said to them, a man shall leave his mother and his father, and a woman shall leave her home, and they too shall become one flesh, and that's marriage. Right there, that's marriage. God instituted marriage right there. A man shall leave his mother and father and cleave unto his wife, and she'll leave her home, and they will cleave together, and they will become one flesh. Now, that had not happened yet. Consequently, his loyalty remains to his mother and his father, and not to the woman that he's engaged to. So his loyalty is as yet to his parents. And so when she says, you haven't told the riddle to even me, putting herself in the highest possible position in his life, and he says, I haven't even told my mother and father yet. And I haven't yet walked, I haven't yet left my mother and my father to cleave unto you. That hasn't happened yet, because it's only the seventh day. And that's what makes that an important to say. You'll find that in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. And in verse 17, it says, and she wept before him. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story about women weeping. When we were first married, We lived at Frankston, and Robin was driving to work. She got pulled over by a policeman for going over the limit. It's the only time in Robin's life she's ever gone over the limit. She got caught. And the copper walked up to the car like they do. And what do you think Robin did? She was so shocked by all this, she broke down and burst into tears and started crying. And do you think she got a ticket? Nah. The bloke gave her a warning. I've never had a warning. Mind you, I've never broken down in tears either. Maybe if next time that happens, I should give that a crack. But she broke down crying. Something about a woman's tears that just dissolves men into blubber. And this is what's happening here. And she wept before him the 7 days while their feast lasted, she just kept at him, crying and begging him and saying, please tell me. And what do we find happens? And it came to pass on the seventh day that he told her, because she lay sore upon him, and told him the riddle to the children of her people. And the men of the city said unto him on the seventh day, she's gone to them and she said, this is Samson's riddle. This is what it means. And in verse 18, and the men of the city said unto him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey? Can't you just feel the arrogance oozing out of these Philistines? He said, what is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? And he said unto them, if you had not ploughed with my heifer, you had not found out my riddle. Now, let me tell you something, friends. Samson referring to the woman who was about to become his wife as his heifer is not a cultural idiom. It is an extremely nasty insult. He's basically saying that she was his cow that had yet to have a calf. It's a really nasty insult in the context of the culture in which they lived. You see, Samson failed to exercise self-discipline. Self-discipline is not self-denial. Self-discipline is submission to God's authority. It's a separation from the things of the world to the will and purpose and plan of God. That's what self-discipline is. And he it didn't even enter his head. And now he finds himself in this situation. And it says, and now we see God is going to actually use these horrible circumstances to his benefit. And he says, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon, and he slew 30 men of them. I think Ashkelon might be like 30 miles away from Timnath. And he went down to Ashkelon and he slew 30 men of the Philistines there. He took their spoil, their change of garments. He took their ceremonial garments from them. And he gave them to the 30 guys at his wedding boozer. Says, and his anger was kindled. Yeah, I imagine it was. His anger was kindled. Now, here's the key to this verse. And he went up to his father's house. So who was he angry with? Not the Philistines. He was angry with his wife. And his anger is seen in two ways. One, he referred to her as his heifer. Very ugly, nasty insult. And his anger was so great that he walked away from her. He didn't consummate that marriage at all. He walked away from her and he went to his father's house. And it seems that after a while he calmed down and his lust started to take over. And it says in verse 20, but Samson's wife was given to his companion, whom he had used as his friend. Now, the word friend here has the idea of, in our concept of a wedding, would be the groomsman. So the guy who sort of, you know, helps the guy who's getting married, if you know what I mean. I'm sure you do. That's the story of Samson's first marriage, and what we're going to find is that Samson at some point decides his lust takes over and he decides to go back and it says, go into the chamber with his wife. In verse 15 and chapter 15, verse 1 says, but it came to pass after a while in the time of wheat harvest that Samson visited his wife with a kid, so with a baby goat, and he said, I will go in to my wife. I'll go and have sex with my wife in the chamber, in the bedroom. But her father would not suffer him to go in. You know why? Because he had already given his daughter to another man. Samson's, and that completes Samson's losses as a result of his disregard for the grace of God. Let's go back. Forward, actually. Let's go forward as we finish today to the book of Psalms, verse 1, again. Let's just dangle Samson up against the background of the blessed man, the man who God says is blessed. He's a man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly. He's a man who stands not in the way of sinners. And he's a man who sits not in the seat of the scornful. And Samson had done all of those things. He had broken two aspects of his Nazarite vow. He allowed the lust of the eyes and the lust of the flesh to completely overwhelm him. And he is the typical example of 1 Corinthians 15:3. Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good character. Friends, there are some people in life you simply have to turn away from. And if you don't turn away from them, you'll be dragged down. You won't drag them up. You will be dragged down and you will be dragged away from your surrender to God. You'll be dragged away from your determination to live under the authority of God and reliant on God in your life. It's a principle that runs through the entire scriptures. Bad company corrupts good character. You don't pull them up, they will pull you down. And, one of the things, one of the really difficult things about ministry is God gives wisdom to the people he puts in leadership over his flock. And sometimes God will give people like Ian and myself, Elise, he'll give us wisdom to see a situation that if we allow it to go on could hurt you. And we really are required to act upon that and to warn and to instruct and to rebuke and to do all those things. You want to be really careful when you come to a place in your life where you think, well, I don't really care what the pastor thinks or what the elders think. This is what I think is what I want to do. That's exactly what Samson did. And it resulted in loss, it resulted in tears, and it resulted in a personal disaster. I want to urge you and encourage you today to make surrender to God's will and to make open dependence upon God's providence your first priority in life, and he won't lead you astray. He never leads anybody astray. So I want to just leave that principle with you from the teaching in the 14th chapter of Judges, and we'll move on. Move on next week. We'll move on with the next thrilling installment in the life of Samson. Two more to go, and we'll see where that lands. So let's have a word of prayer, and then we'll call it a day.